Let's talk business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Welcome as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more. Good afternoon. Welcome to this week's edition of Let's Talk Business with the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry. I am Crystal J. Paul, your host for today, and it's my pleasure to share with you. Today, we will focus on an issue that is becoming increasingly pressing for both business owners and everyday Barbadians: the increasing problem of crime and how it is reshaping the way we do business on the island. The recent escalation of gun violence and crime in Barbados, including the recent tragic shooting at Curtin's gas station, which claimed a life, has reached a critical point. These increasing incidents highlight a broader issue of social instability fueled by economic hardship, youth disconnection, and systemic inequalities. The Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI, and the Barbados Private Sector Association, BPSA, representing the collective voice of the private sector, recognizes the urgent need to address these challenges comprehensively. In this episode, we will discuss why this is happening, how it's impacting our economy and communities, and what can be done to help restore confidence and safety in Barbados. We have a panel of experts who will explore the concerns of the business sector and private sector about the increasing crime problem and its social and economic impact, and recommendations that will effectively address the problem and restore confidence and safety across Barbados. Our speakers today, as we welcome them, Mr. Paul Innes, President of the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Crystal J.
Dr. Tricia Tanis, Chair of the Barbados Private Sector Association.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Mr. Andre Kaur, General Manager of Amalgamated Security Services.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, welcome. Now, let's dive into the topic at hand as we look at even how the fear of crime is shaping business and social life in Barbados. Paul, I'll give you the floor first. Now, how has the escalating crime been impacting the safety and security of even conducting business in Barbados? And specifically, what are the concerns being raised by members of the business sector and the impact on their business?
So thanks for the question, of course, Jay. And I think let's first say that the Barbados Chamber of Commerce is very concerned about the escalating situation in Barbados as it relates to crime and violence. And fundamentally, it impacts everything we do in Barbados, whether it's business, impacts our healthcare system, impacts our confidence in our ability to move around and feel safe. So it impacts all aspects of our livelihood and the way we live and move in Barbados. So it is a national issue. And the chamber has a part to play. The chamber has concerns because it will have implications for business. It will have implications for our people, those that we employ and those that we serve. And therefore, it is something that has the attention of the chamber. And we are a member of the Barbados Private Sector Association, and we are partnering with the Barbados Private Sector Association and other stakeholders to participate and contribute to some of the solutions that are necessary, not only to arrest this challenge, but also to ensure that we deal with some of the fundamental issues within our society. Generally speaking, crime and violence creates a sense of fear. And if that continues and is sustained without being arrested, it will have a direct impact on the ability of businesses to thrive. It would have a direct impact on the psychology of people who work within our various and diverse business across all sectors. And it impacts the psychology of our consumers, who will probably adjust make changes to how they actually consume, where they go, at what point in time they go, which will then have a direct impact on the ability of businesses to, I would dare say, probably extend beyond certain hours. One, two, then you have the concomitant issue around reduction. Though demand is there, reduction in consumption and the acquisition of services across our country.
Okay. So even from the chamber's standpoint, how does this climate of fear affect businesses, the wider economy, and investor confidence?
Well, let's start with investor confidence. And I'll ask you and every Barbadian that is listening this question. Would you invest in an environment in which you have a degree of fear and uncertainty around your safety? Is that who we are? Is that what we want to be? Is that what we should tolerate? Those are the questions I not only ask chamber members, but those are questions I would like to ask every Barbadian, because each one of us work somewhere, go to school somewhere, each one of us do business somewhere, and we have a collective responsibility to ensure that we be part of the solution. But from a chamber perspective, investor confidence can be rattled if there's a sense that investing and doing business can be compromised, given the rising and the levels of crime and violence that we see randomly without consideration for the safety of others, if that continues unabated.
You've given us some food for thought, for sure. Now, what would then the chamber like to see done to restore a sense of safety and to keep economic activity strong?
Well, the chamber needs to, well, not needs to, the chamber will be part of the solution. I think if everyone thinks, all associations, whether government, non-government organizations, I think everyone has a part to play. So the chamber sees itself as a participant and a contributor to the solutions that can be brought to bear and can be implemented to not only manage, but also work towards the prevention of the type of scenarios that we are experiencing today. From the chamber perspective, I think we have a responsibility to invest in our communities. We came from these communities. The people that are getting caught up in crime and violence are from the same communities, and our consumers come from these communities. So we have a responsibility to invest in community programs that can actually help create and develop wholesome, productive citizens. That is one. Two, I think when we think of the main commercial hubs in Barbados, and even those that may not necessarily be the main commercial hubs, I think we can do a better job at ensuring that adequate lighting and security measures are in those places. For example, you would travel and you would see safety officers in some cases, because you may not necessarily have security guards or police. But in some cases, you can have what is known as safety officers patrolling, and given that physical sense of security and comfort around the ability of our people to move and do business with a level of confidence that they won't be compromised and harm come to them. So I think that is something that the chamber can look at and see how we can partner with law enforcement and other agencies to see how we can contribute to enhancing the security of those areas. And then the other one is around how do we and can we provide direct support to some of the initiatives, for example, that is One Family program. But how can the chamber and its members actually contribute and participate in directly in helping several of our communities with the sort of support that they need to ensure that we start from the ground and from as young as I would say 4 or 5, to try and ensure that our young people are so engaged in productive pursuits that as they grow and become adults, they understand right from wrong, and they actually would have choices other than what they may think is the choice to commit criminal acts as they grow into adults, right? Or be swayed. I think we need to be able to influence the mind, and I'm not sure about the will, but we certainly need to be able to influence the mind that they at least know better and have opportunities to be productive citizens.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that, especially training our youth in that way. Now, I'm going to direct our attention to Dr. Tanis and Andre. Now, ladies first, Trisha. From the perspective of the Barbados Private Sector Association, what are some of the top concerns for the private sector? And how has the economic hardship of recent years contributed to the rise in youth crime?
Thank you. Thank you, Crystal J. I think Paul certainly would have covered I think a lot of that. The concerns certainly will weave their way throughout most of the business community. As he indicated, the chamber is a member of the association, and therefore there's frequent discussion and alignment of views on that score. Clearly, the concerns are at several levels, and if we just start as a society, separate and apart from business, because what is clear is that it really doesn't matter what sphere of influence you're in, and even though the context this morning is business, the problem is that essentially we are part of a societal ecosystem. So the primary concern, essentially, of course, is the fact that one of the hallmarks of a successful society has got to be fundamentally civility and respect for law and order. We've always had crime, and there will probably always be some element of crime. But the concern essentially is, I think, the brazen and often indiscriminate nature of the crimes that threaten essentially, I think Paul used the phrase, who we are. Okay, we're not talking about petty thefts and so on, and throwing stones and rocks and bottles. We're talking essentially about the use of lethal force, and very, very concerningly, on another layer, primarily the average age of the person, the offender, is cause for all of us to be concerned. Somewhere between the age of 17 to 24, essentially young school leavers are essentially the ones that we're seeing being hauled off to court on a weekly basis. Okay? And whilst we can sit back and we can say, well, great, another 2 or 3 are off the street, I don't think that as a civil society we can look at our young men essentially being incarcerated almost in batches on a weekly basis and not reflect as well as to what is that statement? What are we really saying about what our society has done to produce essentially a mindset at such a young age that essentially has turned to a life of not just crime, but extremely violent crime. And the access to the sort of assault weapons that they have. So civility and respect for law and order in terms of basic constructs of our societies is a concern. Of course, you would have heard that the general business environment is part of that ecosystem and obviously cannot thrive if our constituents are under threat. Okay? Businesses do not exist by themselves. They exist in communities. They engage with communities. And therefore, anything that affects the community obviously affects us specifically. When you think about the macroeconomic challenges that we have had rebuilding and the hard-fought gains of rebuilding the economy after the pandemic can easily be eroded now, particularly if you think about what can easily happen to the tourism sector, a sector that can be fairly fickle and respond very quickly to certain events. Youth crime, no doubt, the hard economic factors, or what we're considering hard economic factors in some circles, would have some impact. But what we're learning as we continue to talk to each other is that youth crime is multifaceted, and it's not a single variant issue. It's not simply the the result of economic hardship. We have youth unemployment somewhere about mid-20s percent for school leavers and young adults. When you compare it to the national average of 7%, you would see that we do have an issue. When you look essentially at the certification and profile of the persons and the young men coming out and committing these crimes, coming up from school and committing these crimes, you can easily draw a straight line between the lack of certification. Lack of certification may just be a symptom. If you go deeper, what we're seeing essentially is that you have serious self-esteem issues, confidence issues in these young men. And you know, it's just playing out certainly in terms of deviant behavior, poor academic results, and the like. So yes, we can open up the job market, and we can embrace essentially larger cohorts of school leavers. But we still have an issue, right? We still do have an issue. And by the way, we speak about the harsh economic environment, but the truth is that we are seeing once persons are certificated at junior levels, there is a lot of movement right now across the market has definitely opened up for young people, you know, coming out with, let's say, the average of 5 CICs. It is. I mean, right now, I can tell you, you know, it's very difficult to hold on to those resources because they have a lot of options once appropriately sort of certified with school leaving certificates. So I don't know that the youth unemployment is as a result of necessarily hard economic times. There are a cohort of young people who are seemingly not having any challenge with getting jobs, whether or not the jobs are sustainable, whether or not they're quality jobs. There is a lot of movement in terms of the economic you know, factors and opportunities that they can get at a young level. Obviously, more so at minimum wage or just above minimum wage, and there's a lot of movement there. So I would say that let's not simplify it down to economic hardship. I think it is a multivariate issue, very complex, and I think as we go on to the program, it'll be very, very clear that we do need to look at the development of these young people before they actually get out into the workforce and before the economy becomes an issue. The economic factors, though, in all fairness to the question, can be affecting their household income, their parents and other sources of income as well, forcing them to look for alternative methods of supporting themselves on their households and their communities. And therefore, there is a
I'm
void.
sorry. I'm very sorry to cut you, Tricia. You had some background noise there. Could you just repeat that last phrase if you recall what you said? You're talking about
Sure.
the factors. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. So I'm saying that essentially, even if it doesn't affect their employment opportunities, it could be affecting others in their households, their parents, guardians. You know, the harder economic realities may be impacting persons on whom they rely. And therefore, that could also be forcing them out into the marketplace, essentially. And if they're not, you know, fully qualified or not necessarily confident and present themselves well, I certainly don't have a lot of confidence in their talents and skills. You know, it is very easy then to prey on that kind of mindset and to divert them into less constructive activities. So it is a very complex issue, Crystal J, one that the social partners are essentially now sitting down and trying to engage in terms of the multiple variables that lead and feed into youth crime.
Yes. A holistic approach is definitely necessary. Thank you. Now, even as it relates to foreign direct investment, this we run the risk of reduced foreign direct investments. And so, what are the broader implications for the local economy if crime and gun violence continue to escalate?
Well, I think that's obvious. I think Paul obviously covered some of that as well in his comments. I'll say this: we don't want to get to that stage. Okay, I think it is pretty obvious that you know, one of the things that Barbados essentially has presented to the world is a picture and a proud history and record of stability, civic stability, political stability, you know, societal stability. We have been almost you know, almost a blue ribbon society for how well managed we have been, and the fact that we can solve our own problems largely. You really do not want to get to a space where we do know on a macro perspective, we're still not back into investment grade. We are steadily climbing back to there, which is great, but we are still a very sensitive and delicate part in our journey as it relates to being, investment grade on a global stage. The much touted and discussed borrowings that the government have just embarked in, $500 million, dollars at a fairly hefty price of 8.5%. I mean, you don't have to necessarily be an accountant to understand that that is almost twice the rate of the average concessionary funding that we've been getting from IMF and IDB and certainly concessionary lenders. Why do we have to pay so heavily? We have to pay so heavily because we're not investment grade. We're still a fairly high risk sovereign profile. And therefore, whilst we're having a conversation that says, look, we have actually, we're on a good trajectory, and if we continue as we are, we will certainly get back to investment grade. The point is that we're not, and therefore, we really do not need any panic or any variability, but not any confidence that our global partners, our global concessionary lending partners have invested in us. We certainly don't need any variability in the growth that we're seeing in the rebounding tourism sector. So the implications can be very significant. I think we all need to ensure that we really do not realize the significance of that fallout by essentially engaging and trying to get to the bottom of this issue as soon as possible.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I am going to turn our attention now to Andre Kaur. Now, Andre, as one who runs a security company, how has demand changed? And are more businesses now seeking private security or other protective measures?
There has been, I would say, a slight shift, a significant shift. We do have more of our existing customers reaching out to see what can be done, what additional measures. They are checking their own systems, making sure everything is functional and operational. There are persons who are asking questions. We still find a gap in certain services, such as cash in transit, with the small and medium enterprises, where people are still keeping out the cash at the business. They are not necessarily gravitating as much to the services provided by my company and other companies in terms of being able to move the cash at an insured and with trained personnel. And therefore, by having cash on hand, you still find that will be an attractant to persons of ill intent. And those are some of the challenges as a security company in engaging and trying to get businesses to understand that the different threat levels. Also, we find that persons are engaging us more about robbery training, how to engage, how to get through a robbery safely. Because at the end of the day, while the money may be insured, it's also about life which cannot be bought back. And how do we preserve that? And also, the same essence, how do we are we able to share with the police information thereafter, describing height, features, and so on, so that we can make for an arrest. But yes, there had been some shift, but I do believe that a lot of persons still, there is room for improvement in some instances. But there has been some persons reaching out more, asking questions, seeking quotations, and seeming to make a shift to be more security conscious.
Interesting. So then, what practical advice would you give to businesses, especially small ones that might not have big budgets, to adequately secure their operations and their staff?
Well, the point is, security is everyone's business. It is every Barbadian, everyone who is visiting. It is all our business. It affects each and every one of us, from the tourist who is here for a couple of days to the person who is looking to migrate here, to the Barbadians who are born and bred here. We all have to keep our eyes open and be aware of activities, strange personnel, strange movement, report it accordingly to the security officer, the police officer, whoever that they may find that they can relate, so that it can be addressed and investigated before it escalates. We are suggesting that persons look at cost-effective measures. There are electronic security systems which are relatively cost-effective that can at least aid in investigation. They can act also as a deterrent. Persons see cameras, they may think twice about engaging in that they are being monitored. Signage saying that there's perhaps no cashier because it's a cashless system. Funds being moved off property by insured and certified agents, and just an awareness to staff, to personnel, that these are real threats. These are scenarios that we want persons to be mindful and aware of, and don't just ignore it. Just that person who just doesn't feel right, that person who hangs around after at 5 o'clock outside the building. Report these things. Don't ignore them, because that is where it starts. Because criminals, what they do have is time. They have a time to observe your actions, your habits, and see, okay, this is when the money gets moved. This is when the cashiers close up. This is when the tills are turned, and exchanges are made. They have the time to monitor you and see. So you have to also be just as obvious of your surroundings as they are, so that you can be cognizant of these shifts and movements and strange personnel, and not just ignore it and report it accordingly so that it can be investigated.
Yes. Well, you've all given us some food for thoughts, even as we see the crime escalation, but how do we apply it to our businesses and what steps do we take? We definitely need to be more vigilant and apply some strategies, even as we would have heard some in this program. Now, I just have one final question for you. It's really towards Trisha, but Andre, you can respond, and so can you, Paul. Well, what strategies can the private sector and government collaborate on to effectively address the escalating problem of crime? I'm going to give you each 1 minute.
Oh, okay. So we've been dialoguing on this and having engagements, several meetings. We have actually, as VPSA, have actually supported and submitted essentially, what we our plan very, very, very closely. Let me just and very quickly just run down essentially in terms of internships and training for school leavers from vulnerable communities. I think the whole vulnerable community issue is something that we have to highlight. To the public, we have seen evidence of a paradise, at least in terms of from the ministries and the sociologists who have done the studies, that 80% of our violent crimes are being linked to a handful of schools and feeder communities in terms of their youth. And therefore, for the BBSA, we are focusing on those vulnerable communities. So we're talking about internships and training for school leavers from these communities, the adoption of high-risk secondary schools to engage via mentorship and resources for at-risk students. Supporting vulnerable families, either through the One Family Program or similar, again, linked back to the high-risk environments. Funding of public awareness and award programs, such as Crime Stoppers. And we've also essentially advanced an initiative for Safe Zones Barbados, the private-public partnership, where essentially we can, again, bear down on the communities of concern. Thank you, Krista J., for the opportunity to be here and to contribute to this discussion.
Yes, thank you. Now, Andre or Paul, I think Trisha really gave us quite a bit there. And is there anything you'd like to add to it?
Well, I think all the speakers here agree on the same that it's multifaceted, and you have to have short, medium, and long-term plans in place to address it. The short term, starting from the younger generation, teaching them and bringing them back to those level of morals and providing them with opportunities as they go through primary into high school, to prepare them for the working world, to give them opportunities that they can earn and feed their families. Medium term, investing back into the communities, providing those persons opportunities, internships, as mentioned earlier, and opportunity for growth, whether through creating businesses, their own small businesses, to sustain themselves, to hire and employ others, and so on. So we have to contribute back, look at the root, not just the branches, but look at the roots of the problems, invest in those problems. And just right now, everyone being alert, police presence on the road, looking at the root of where these activities are coming from, gang related or otherwise, and see how best we can engage, and see how we best we can nullify to the best of our ability to bring the numbers down and
Thank
manage to a
you.
manageable level.
Thank you. Paul, would you add anything to that in a few seconds?
All I would say, Krista J, is I think We all have a responsibility. This is not a government issue. This is not a police issue. This is not a chamber of business issue. This is not a security issue. This is a national issue. And I would encourage everyone listening to us to play their part. Do not turn a blind eye to crime and things that are eroding our ability to live in Barbados and be safe.
Well, thank you very much. Our esteemed panel today, Mr. Paul Innes, President of the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Yes, sir. Dr. Tricia Tanis, Chair of the Barbados Private Sector Association.
Thank you again.
Mr. Andre Kaur, General Manager, Amalgamated Security Services.
Thank you very much.
Yes, even as we looked today at the rising crime and escalation of crime in Barbados, and how it is affecting businesses and investor confidence. I am Crystal J. Paul. Thank you very much for listening. And that's it for today's edition of Let's Talk Business with the Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry. That's it for another edition of Let's Talk Business with Barbados Chamber of Commerce and Industry, BCCI. Join us again next time as we hear the perspectives of various subject matter experts and stay up to date on the challenges and solutions around emerging and current trends in business, policies, trade, and more.